A sheet.
I don't have a sheet.
No, we'll find one. Let's just get started. We're on Daf Zayin Amud Aleph. So we began the sugya of Pasha Ipsha, and he finds a piece of pastry, we'll call it, because we're not sure if it's chametz or it's matzah, in a teva, in some sort of bread basket, and it's Pesach, let's say. He has to determine whether it's matzah or chametz. So Rav tells us that it depends on Rov, and the Gemara is not happy about that. In other words, what does he usually put into this basket? Does he usually use it for matzah, or does he usually use it for chametz? Now, in general, the answer to that question should be relative to what time we're at. Meaning, if we're in the middle of Teves, then presumably, what does he put into the basket? He'll put chametz there. If it's Erev Pesach, or certainly on Pesach, presumably he puts matzah in there.
Can he use the same basket?
Okay, that's a different issue, whether he's allowed to use the same basket or not. But the mitzias, the reality is that he uses the same basket for both chametz and matzah. So Gemara says the following. Why should it depend upon Rov? We have another principle. And this is based on the halach of Maaser Sheni. And that is, Azlinan Basar Basra. It depends on the last use. So yesterday we gave a mashal. Let's say you go into a hotel room and you find something that was left over there. You assume it belongs to the last occupant in the hotel room. Who was there last? That's called Basra. And the Mishnah codifies this halacha of Basra with regard to Mos, with regard to coins that you find in Yerushalayim. So let's see where we're up to. Milotnan. Can anybody help me identify? I mean, I have my finger on the place, but it's smack in the middle of the page. The first word in the line is nasal, if that helps you.
Yes.
Milotnan.
10 lines up from the small.
Yeah?
From the wide line. 10 lines up.
10 lines up from the wide lines, if that helps. Okay. So the Mishnah that's being quoted here is going to give us a number of different rules and regulations with regard to money that you found in Yerushalayim. Now, in order to appreciate what's going on, there was a large volume of Maaser Sheni money that was brought to Yerushalayim, but the preponderant majority of Maaser Sheni money that's brought to Yerushalayim is brought from the various corners of Israel during the Regel period, when people made Aliyah LeRegel. They would then bring along with them, all the farmers would bring along with them their Maaser Sheni geld in order to purchase either food or, more specifically, animals in Yerushalayim. Animals were used for a carbon shlomim, because Maaser Sheni money can be dedicated for a carbon shlomim. So then there are two different approaches. You can ask yourself, well, I found this coin on the streets of Yerushalayim, and I don't know whether it's Maaser Sheni or Chulin, why don't I just ask myself the question of Rov? What most coins that you will find on the streets of Yerushalayim, are they Chulin money or are they Maaser Sheni money? And what should be the answer to that question? It's relative to the time of the year. If you're talking during the Regel period of time, when the vast majority of Mos are being brought to Yerushalayim, are being brought from all the corners, all the farmers from the different areas, that's Maaser Sheni money. But if you're talking during the bulk of the year, the balance of the year, then for sure most of the money is the local Yerushalmi money. This is Chulin money. It's not my Sasheni money. Now, that's not the only relevant issue here. There's another variable that should be taken into the equation and be considered, and that's location. So, what do I mean by location? As we described yesterday, there's a long line of people who are called konim, right? These are the buyers, and they're standing in front of the mocher. He's the vendor. He's selling animals. Those animals are chulin. The people waiting online are people who are holding on to my sasheni money, either because they brought that my sasheni to Yerushalayim, or because this was leftover my sasheni money that was given to the local inhabitants of Yerushalayim. Because when you had surplus my sasheni, Rashi explains, you would give it over to some of the local Yerushalayim and say, you use it for what you use it, and they used it to buy behemos. So that location here becomes a critical element as well, because if you find a coin right in front of the vendor, then you assume, right, the vendor is behind a counter, he's behind the counter. So if you find these coins in front of the counter, then you assume that the coins fell from one of the buyers who is holding on to what kind of money? My sasheni. The status of the my sasheni money will be transferred to chulin only after he pays the vendor, the seller. But if you find it in front of the counter, you assume it was dropped accidentally by one of the buyers, and therefore it's my sasheni money. So that too is a relevant factor. Now we have to ask a third question here. Not only is it a question of what time of the year and where exactly, what location you found it in, but now you have to ask a third question. And that is, do I assume that the most that I find are accumulated most that predate this period of time, meaning they're old most, or do I assume no, that these most, these coins that I find, were recently dropped? And that's going to be relevant to our first factor of the time factor. Where are we on the calendar? If we're during the Moed, during the Regalim, or right before the Regalim, I mean, then if we assume that all the other Mos were cleaned out, in other words, all, whatever had to be found was already found, then I have to assume that these Mos that I find regular time are what? My Sasheni Mos. They're the more recent Mos. And they were brought in by the only regal now. If, on the other hand, I assume that there's an accumulation of Mos from way back when till today, see, this is where the concept of Pasha Ipsha is going to be very relevant, because what is the fact that there's Ipush, that there's spoilage, what does that indicate? Is it new or is it old?
Old.
It's old. Now, if I have these two factors, the halachic factors, I have Rov versus a Basra, then how would you match up old and new? Do you follow me? So I've got Rov, and I've got Basra, and now I have old and new. Old belongs to what?
Rove.
To Rov. And new belongs to Basra. You follow? So the more I have evidence that indicates that what I'm looking at now is new, the more I can say that Basra is going to determine halacha. But the more that I have no indication that it's from now, but it's really old, and it therefore belongs to a larger, a wider period of time, then the more I'm inclined to use Rov. Are you with me? Yeah. So the concept of Basra really hinges on the fact that I have reason to believe that what I'm looking at now is something recent, and therefore as Lina Basra Basra. But if, on the other hand, I have a Mishka Babel, I mix together not only what's recent but also what's old, then I should look at the Rove over the course of a larger period of time. I don't have a right to pinpoint recent history. So all these variables go into the equation. So the Mishnah says the following. Point number one, this is the first rule. Mos shenimtzu lifnei sochrei behema. Right, so in Yerushalayim, we had the vendors who were selling animals, and right in front of their counter, we find Mos. Is li olam maser. We always consider them maser sheni, because Klal Yisrael bring Mos, and not only do they bring the Mos during the regal period, but if they have a surplus of Mos, they hand it over to the Yerushalmis, and those Yerushalmis who receive Mos maser sheni, they wait for their opportunity to purchase behemos. And again, if we assume it fell from the hands of one of the buyers, okay, we're gonna in just a minute we'll see Rashi. Rashi wants to know maybe it fell from the hand of the seller, but right now it was in front of the counter. So if it's in front of the counter, we assume that it was dropped by one of the potential buyers who was waiting online to buy with Maaser Sheni money, and therefore it's li'ola maaser sheni. In other words, even if you look at the entire year as one whole entity, and you ask yourself, what are the majority of mos that you'll find located in that particular spot, which is where the people are waiting online to purchase behemos, the entire year, it's always going to be a rov maaser sheni. Most of the money in that location, even if I take into consideration the entire year, is going to be maaser sheni. So Rav Moshe, at this point in time, at this stage in the Mishnah, does the concept of Basra surface? Does it play any role whatsoever? No. There's no Basra over here. Why? We're going to look at the entire year as one entity, recent, old, it's irrelevant, because in that spot, what most will you find in all likelihood? You will find maaser sheni money. However, then we get to another location. Now we're on the Har HaBayis. With regard to the Har HaBayis, Chulin. The money is money of Chulin, because we're no longer talking about people who are coming to buy animals, right? We're not buying animals on the Har HaBayis. And now the question we have to ask is, what do you mean Chulin? Shouldn't the Mishnah make a distinction now with another factor? Although the factor of location in terms of buyers and sellers and behemoths and so forth, that's irrelevant. But what factor lechoras should be relevant? Time factor. Is it during the regular period or does it not? The answer is that's also irrelevant. And why is that irrelevant? Because with regard to Har HaBayis, what we're going to say is that Har HaBayis has all the coins of all the year, meaning even during the regal period, we're not going to say that we find mos on the Har HaBayis, those mos were dropped by the regalim, by the ole regal, who are bringing their maaser sheni money to Yerushalayim. There's no reason to assume that there's a higher percentage or concentration of mos maaser sheni at the time of regel when we deal with maaser sheni money on the Har HaBayis. In other words, there's nothing that sets up Basra in the case of Har HaBayis. Why is there nothing that sets up Basra? Because Basra is only relevant when we disconnect the past and all the objects that are shayach to the past from the recent history and the present. There's no way of doing that. Anything that's on the Har HaBayis may have been dropped on the Har HaBayis at any period of time during the entire year. So that in two cases now, Basra is irrelevant. First, in the case of Lifnei Sochrei Behema, because there we know that these coins, even during the entire year, are definitely, or almost definitely, going to be Maaser Sheni. They were dropped by the buyers. Again, we'll have to see about the seller in just a minute. And number two, Har HaBayis, because again, Har HaBayis is an accumulation of lost coins that encompasses the entire year. There's no halacha of Basra. There's no reason to assume that old coins that may have dropped there before the regular period of time were cleaned away. They weren't cleaned away. They may have been, they may have fallen here, there, or elsewhere. And if you pardon the phrase, they fell between the cracks, meaning they're somewhere lost on the floor of the Har HaBayis. Where does the factor of Basra come into play? Meaning, when do we assume that it depends upon what period of time you're in? Because the old ones are gone, and what you're seeing now is the most recent coins. The answer is B'Yerushalayim. What is this Yerushalayim referring to? Neither Lifnei Sochrei HaBehema nor on the Har HaBayis. We're talking about coins that were found in the streets of Yerushalayim. Now we want to know, is there some relevancy to what we call the recent time period? And that's when the Mishnah formulates the principle of Basra, B'shas HaRegel Maser. Right, the people of Israel are now coming en masse to Yerushalayim with their Maaser Sheni Geld, and therefore we assume that anything that we find today during Shas HaRegel is recent. And the Gemara is going to ask why. Why do we assume it's recent? Why not just Mishka Babel integrated into all the most of the whole year round? B'sharyamos Hashana, during the rest of the year, Chulin, we can assume that most of the most in Yerushalayim are Chulin. The Amar Rav Shmaya Bar Zera my time. Why is it that in the case of Yerushalayim, we're going to assume that if it's Shas HaRegel, then these most were dropped recently. Now during this period of time of Regel, where the Rov of the most are Maaser Sheni, and he answers, this is the famous principle of Rav Shmaya that has to do with Kavod to Yerushalayim, Hoil. Vishuke Yushalayim Asuyim Lihiskabed Bechol Yom. That they commissioned and they paid workers to clean the streets of Yushalayim on a daily basis. And therefore, all the old coins were taken away. They were already cleaned away. Rashi has a question here, why didn't they bother cleaning Harabayas on a daily basis? And then we would assume that on Harabayas during Shas HaRegel, any coins that I find on Harabayas belong to are Maaser Sheni Geld. And the answer, says Rashi, is that the Harabayas was on an incline, and the wind used to carry away most of the stuff, and there wasn't a great accumulation of dirt that required Nikayon, that required a daily cleaning. But in Yerushalayim proper, they cleaned Yerushalayim on a daily basis, and therefore all the old mos from the whole year round were cleaned away, and anything that you find now is recent. It was dropped recently. Again, I don't know what recently means, whether it's in the last 24 hours or in the last week or so, I don't know, but there's something now that becomes very relevant called Shas HaRegel. And now during the Shas HaRegel, we're going to assume that the old coins that were chulin from the whole year round, they were cleaned out. Now what you're looking at is recently fallen coins, and those recently coins are brought by whom? By the masses of people who came on Aliyah HaRegel with their Maaser Sheni Geld. Alma, what do we see from this Mishnah? Amrina, we have a principle, Kamai, Ozli, Lei. The originals, the old ones, Ozli, Lei, they went away. They were taken away. Vahani, and now when I look at something and I want to know what it is and I have to identify it, is it Maaser Sheni or Chulin? Achrini Ninhu. These are different. These are not the most that came from the whole year round, which would be Rov Chulin, but rather these are the most that came from this period of time, namely the Shas HaRegel. Rov is Maaser Sheni. Now, after the Gemara goes through this whole long investigation, the Gemara swings back to our original question on Rav. Rav says that if I have a piece of unidentified pastry and I find it on Pesach, I don't know whether it's chametz or matzah, and Rav looks at the major use. You know, what was the majority use? What did it, if you take a look at this teva, what went into the teva during the entire course of the year? Was it mostly chametz or was it mostly matzah? And if you look at it from the perspective of the entire year, then what conclusion are you going to probably come to? That this is chametz based on rov. It's hachinami. Why don't we apply the principle? Nema, we should say, kama azil. That the original pieces that went into the box were cleaned out on almost like on a daily basis. And why is that so? So Rashi says, and this is an interesting psychology, that when you have a choice whether to take out from this teva, whether you take out the old pas or the new pas, you better take out the old ones. Why is that? They're spoiling, so you want to save them when they're still worth something. So it's very interesting. You have two cartons of milk in your fridge. One is expiring today, and the other is expiring a week from today. Which one are you going to drink? I would drink the one that's expiring a week from today, but Rashi is saying no. You're going to drink the milk that's already expiring now, because otherwise you're going to have to pour it. It's like spilled milk, if you know what I mean. So you see that with regard to the teva, the Gemara thinks the psychology should be that all the old pieces of bread from yesteryear, from yonder beyond, they were cleaned out because we want to eat up the expiring pastries. But what we find now, therefore, is recent. And if it's recent, then if it's on Pesach, then the assumption is that what went into the basket Pesach time, not chametz, but rather
matzah.
And not only that, Rashi says, moreover, he did bedika. So if he did bedika, he probably checked this box, you know, this teva, this bread basket, and he cleaned out any chametz that was in there. So obviously, we should assume that what he finds now is matzah. So forget about Rov. Why does Rav introduce the factor of Rov, that we look at the most of the use, majority use of this teva during the entire course of the year? If you look at the most in Yerushalayim during the entire course of the year, then Enoch Inami Rov is Chulin. And yet, the Mishnah establishes that B'shas HaRegel Maser. Why do I assume B'shas HaRegel Maser? And the answer is, Hol V'shuke Yerushalayim Asuyim L'skabim Kol Yom, that we cleaned out the old most, and what we're left with is the recent most, that's called Azlina Basa Basra. And the Svar of Basra completely undermines and neutralizes the Svar of Rov, because there's no logical reason to apply the Rov in terms of how many coins of Chulin were dropped in the streets of Yerushalayim during the entire year, because we know that these coins that we found were dropped recently because the old coins already cleaned out. And that's called Azlin and Basa Basra. And if we have a principle of Azlin and Basa Basra with regard to most Maaseh Sheni and Yerushalayim, we should apply the same principle with regard to Chametz and Matzah, that since the most recent use, if you find this unidentified pastry on Pesach, was certainly a use of Matzah, then forget about the entire year. I don't have to determine what the majority use of the table was during the course of the entire year. The Basra, the last situation, the most recent, that's going to completely neutralize and undermine the Rov of the whole year round, and we're going to have to assume, and we can assume, that it's Matzah. Whereas Rav seems to say, well, you want to assume that what you find is Matzah, that depends upon the Rov. What did you do with this basket? You know, you might have baskets that you generally use for Matzah, but that's kind of rare. Most baskets, if you use them both for Matzah and Pesach, again, you have to clean it out, I guess, from the crumbs or whatever you have to do, but you're going to use it for chametz the whole year round. So the majority use of this teva is going to be chametz. If that be the case, you're in trouble, because if you find the pastry, says Rashi, says Rav, you have to determine its identity based on Rov. So the Gemara says, I don't get it, I object. Why should it be based on Rov when we have halacha of Basra? And therefore the Gemara concludes by saying, hi, that this unidentified pastry, deha idnahu, it belongs to this recent period of time, which means it's matzah. So why does Rav apply the principle of Rov? And by the way, Rav is willing to apply the principle of Rov, Lakula and Lachumra. If this basket is mostly used for during the entire course of the year for matzah, then I can assume this piece is matzah. But why do I need that? Why does Rav have to hang his hat on this peg of Rov? Forget about Rov. Even without Rov, I don't need Rov. Rov is irrelevant here. What's relevant here is Ha'idna, which is Basra, which means Kama Kama Ozle. The old pieces of bread were removed. Now, before we see the Gemara's answer for Rav, let's take a little bit of a break and learn Rashi, because Rashi adds a lot here to this sugya. So we're going to look at Rashi, Dibra Maschil. Well, it's a little bit tricky. I'll tell you why. Because I think there's a printing error, at least in my Gemara. Maybe in your Gemaras they corrected it. In my Gemara, they bolded the words, Kevan Sherov Samatza. But if you drop down three lines, you'll see two dots. And then it says, Rov Ochle Basar.
Yes.
That really is a separate paragraph in Rashi. The reason why they didn't bold it is because in this case, Rashi didn't write the words of the Gemara. He simply gave you a presentation for an introduction, a background to this sugya. Rov ochle basar b'Yerushalayim kol yemos hashana mimos ma'aser shenihem. So people come to Yerushalayim and they buy meat, and what they do is they bring their ma'aser sheni. Lefisha loya. Now why is that rov? L'chor you would say that should only apply during the moed period time. That's when they came in aliyah l'rug and they brought their ma'aser sheni. But he says no. Kol yemos hashana. Why is it the whole year round? And he says lefisha loya maspikim lecho kol mos ma'aser sheni shalem. They brought a massive amount of coins to Yerushalayim that were endowed with Kedushas Ma'aser Sheni, and this they brought during the regal period. but they couldn't use up their entire supply of Mos. V'nosnim osam, they gave it, they bequeathed it, so to speak, as a gift to the Bnei Ha'ir. B'tovas hanah, tovas hanah means, you know, I'm doing you a favor, maybe you owe me one. V'hem ochlin osam v'kedushasam, and the Bnei Ha'ir will use the Maaser Sheni for Kedusha. Maaser Sheni money has to be dedicated for Kodesh, and therefore you have to buy food, or in this case you buy an animal and you bring it as a korban. The Ikar Mos Maaser, what do they do? What was the primary use of Achilas Mos Maaser? Shlamim. They would buy a korban shlamim. In other words, shlamim is bo b'nedava. So if you have a nedava and you want to give a voluntary korban, you buy an animal which you designate as a korban shlamim, and instead of digging into your pocket and taking out, you know, valuable money to buy the shlamim, you're allowed to use maaser sheni money for the sake of buying shlamim. This is a very fundamental principle here, because in general, we don't use up mitzvah geld for another mitzvah. And here, lechora, maaser sheni and shlamim are two different mitzvahs. So you don't use up you've dedicated some mos for the mitzvah of maaser sheni, and has a special mitzvah of achilas maaser sheni. And now you're using it to buy, you know, like killing two birds at one stone, using it to buy shlamim. But the Gemara says that there's a separate din, that kedushas mos maaser sheni is the kedusha of shlamim. It's one identical kedusha. So he's not using it for, or diverting it towards another mitzvah. Hilkach, therefore, lochim mehen behemos. So there's a vast amount of mos in Yerushalayim, and those are used to buy behemos. The kolzman sheyesh lo mos meiser eino motzi mos chulin. If he has a choice, he has two pockets. In his right pocket, he has mos meiser sheni. In his left, he has mos chulin. He's going to dig into his right pocket and use the meiser sheni money, which has a kedusha that can be fulfilled with a shlum, a carbon shlum. Okay, so now, where do you find these mos? So the Mishnah makes the following distinction, that if you find these mos on the streets of Yerushalayim, that's one thing. We have no reason to believe that those mos are maaser sheni mos. If, on the other hand, you find these mos in front of the counter of the mocher behemos, then you assume that these mos were maaser sheni money that were dedicated to buy korban shlamim, because rov or ikar mos maaser sheni is for shlamim. So you assume that who dropped these mos? The buyer. The afal gav the ikal amem effect. Rashi, I don't understand. It's possible to say shema miyad hamocher naflu. Maybe it was the mocher who dropped these mos. What's the status of the mos in the hands of the mocher, the seller himself? Chulin. Why are they chulin? Because where did he get these mos from? He got them from the buyers. The buyers were holding on to maaser sheni geld. What happens to that maaser sheni? It's pedias maaser sheni, means it is transferred, the kedusha is transferred from the coins themselves over to the animals. The animal becomes kodesh, and the coins become chulin, and that's a classical case of pidyon. As a result, the vast majority of mos that are in the hands, again, it could be possible that the mocher has a couple of mos of maaser sheni in his pocket, because maybe he has his own maaser sheni money. He's going to go to his next door vendor and buy an animal. I don't know what he's going to do with it, or make his own pidyon. But suffice it to say that 99.999% of the money in his pocket is chulin money. That's the money that he received in exchange for the maaser sheni. And in other words, in exchange for the animal which now replaces the maaser sheni. Says Rashi, Safek isura l'chumra. Again, Rashi's not willing to say that simply because of the location, and I found it in front of the counter, that itself is proof positive that it fell from the lokeach and not from the mocher. Rashi says that ostensibly there's a 50% chance that it fell from the mocher. The mocher, after all, has a massive amount of money. So let's look at the coins. Rabosai, if you would ask me the following question. On the majority of the coins in the possession, who's holding on to the majority of the coins? Is it the lokhim, meaning the buyers? Let's say there are 10 people online, right? Each one has X amount of money in his pocket. Does that X is it equal to, is it less than, or is it more than the Y number of coins in the possession of the mocher? What would you say? The mocher has more. Because the mocher is an accumulation of mos over the course of time. And there's a massive amount of people. Now, maybe at some point he goes to what's called a chenvani. The chenvani is the money changer. And he says, you know, I have all these little coins and whatever. Give me a big coin. I'll give you 10, you know, 10 silver coins. You give me one gold coin. But in the meantime, he's accumulated a vast amount of coins. And therefore, at this point, you would say that there's a very good chance that the mocher dropped these coins. Again, Rashi is totally oblivious to the location in the sense of, is it in front of the vendor? Is it behind the vendor? Let's say he found it, according to Rashi, right there. You know, it's at the, you know, here's my hand and I'm the lokeach and I'm giving you, let's say, Jerry, you're going to be the mocher now in this example, and you're going to take this mos, right, and give me an animal. Go take Elsie the cow, right, for Shlomo. So at this point, if the mos fell somewhere in between us, it could be that I dropped it, it could be that you dropped it. So Rashi says, we don't know who dropped it. If we would be able to determine that I dropped, meaning the lokeach dropped it, then it would be mos, my sesheni, because it was before the transaction, so there's no opinion. But if it was the mos that fell from the mocher, then we assume that those mos are chulin, because it's after the sale was clinched, and therefore there was pinyon. But we don't know who dropped the coins. So Rashi says, Safek Isura L'chumra. Because if a person would violate Kedushas Ma'aser Sheni, that's a serious violation of a lav. And therefore, we're going to have to go L'chumra. So take a look at Tosfos. Pirush HaKunshus, top line. Afal pi de'ika l'mitle. We can just be tola, we can assume and attribute it to the mocher, k'mo b'lokeach. So Rashi, from his perspective, says that if you ask me who dropped these coins, I simply don't know. I'm left in a 50-50 suffix in the dark. And therefore, misfeka, talini l'chumra, we have to assume it was dropped by the lokeach and not by the mocher. V'ein nira l'ri. The Ri says, I don't like Rashi's pshat. Why? So here you want to underline the next line. I mean, this is something we want to think about. Dismoch miuta de chulin l'shar mos l'palga de mocher v'havile ruba leheter. Tosa says the following. We have something called smoch miuta l'palga, meaning if you have 50-50, but you have another factor, even if it's a miut, but if you add those few percentage points to the 50%, you can create a rov. And the Ri says that in this scenario, we can do exactly that. We can join together palgo with miuta and create a rov. Why? He says the following. That let's assume that if we don't know who dropped these mos, whether it was the mocher or the lokeach, there are two, shall we say, equal candidates, and that gives me a palgo al palgo. I don't know if it was the mocher or the lokeach. But he says, let's add something else. Perhaps the mocher dropped his mos, meaning not the mos that he received from the lokeach, correct? He has other mos. In other words, if you look at the bag of coins, right? So let's say the mocher opens up shop at 7 a.m. in the morning, so he has a bag of coins. Those coins are mos chulin that he owns from yesteryear, from whenever. And then he receives mos from the mocherim. I'm sorry, from the lokrim, and the lokuchas actually is the word. And what does he do with those mos? He puts it into the same bag. I'm just dramatizing. It doesn't have to be in the same bag, but it means to say he has now an accumulation of two factors, of A plus B. He's got A, his own personal mos that he uses, you know, to, you know, before he opens shop, he takes himself a cup of coffee, so he spends, you know, he gives him in my day, it used to be a dime, and now it's a dollar or more. Can you get a coffee for a dollar? Whatever it is, anyway, it's no longer a dime. But he has money that he uses to buy whatever he has to buy. That's his own money. Then he has a volume of coins that he received from the lokuchos, from the buyers, from the each lokeach. Those are also chulin because after the pinyon. So the Ri says that this would not be a case of Suffolk Isura L'chumra. Suffolk Isura L'chumra means if I'm endowed and I don't have a Rov, I have a situation of 50-50. In that Suffolk, I have to go L'chumra because we're dealing with an Isur Doraisa, Suffolk Doraisa L'chumra. But if I can add to the palga, meaning to the 50-50, in the question of who dropped these coins, I can add another factor that there are, although you have to ask the question whether this coin fell from him or from him. Well, you want to say that he, let's say the mocher, has only 50% of the coins. No. The mocher has the 50% of the coins that were used in the transaction, but he also has additional coins that weren't part of the transaction. And once you add that mi'uta, that small minority amount of coins to the volume of coins that he received in the transactions, you end up with a rov. And therefore, we should not apply the principle of Safek L'chumra. So now we're back to square one, says the Ri. Why does the Gemara assume that it fell from, I assume it fell from the Lekuchos, and since the Lekuchos are holding on to my Sushani guilt, when they drop the my Sushani guilt, we know that it's my Sushani. Why do you say so? I can construct a rove that would lead me to the conclusion that in all likelihood the most that we found a chulin most, because we don't know, you know, in the transaction over the Maaser Sheni, with the Maaser Sheni versus the, you know, which is being exchanged for the animal, we have a, let's say, a 50-50 chance as to whether or not the most fell before the transaction, meaning from the Lekuchos, and the Maaser Sheni, or it fell after the transaction from the hands of the Mocher. So that ends up with 50-50. But who says that these Mos were Mos of transaction? Maybe these Mos were Mos that the Mocher owned, and they are certainly Mos Chulin. So why should I go to Chumrah when I find the Mos right there? Omer Ri. Okay, now this you have to underline. For Omer Ri, the Lokrim, I call the Lekuchos, he calls it Lokrim, Havi Ruba. The Kama B'nei Yodim Omdim Al Behema Achas, I would have said Al Mocher Echad, Leknos. Wow, the Ri says something very impressive. There are two ways of analyzing the mos, meaning when I ask where did these mos come from and what's the identity of these mos, I can formulate two different questions. One question is, well, how, you know, let's look at the volume of mos. The volume of mos, is it mostly Maaser Sheni? Is it mostly Chulin? Is it 50-50? Those are issues when I address the question of the mos. But there's another question here, another factor that I have to enter into the equation. And that is, who dropped the mos? Now, let's assume that I'm not going to, I mean, present company excluded. So when I say you, I don't mean you. But let's say you have a hole in your pocket. Now, is there an equal statistical probability that the hole in someone's pants pocket is the hole of the mocher as well as the lokeach? Is that a 50-50 statistical probability?
Yeah.
No, it's not.
The mocher has more.
No, it's lokeach. Why? Because for every mocher, there are 10 lokhim. I'm just making up that number. So how many pairs of slacks do you have? You have 11 pairs of slacks. Yeah, I'm dramatizing. This is not what Tosa has in mind. I'm just, you know, this is L'Saberta
Oz. So because there's more lokhim, then there are...
Correct. For every mocher, there are 10 lokhim. I'm just making up a number. Then maybe there are 100 lokhim for every mocher. You know, not everyone goes into the business of selling animals.
Who's carrying the most money that might create a hole?
That might create the hole. That's interesting. But keep in mind that what Tosis is saying over here is that even if you convince yourself that you know, amongst the most in this transaction, or shall we say, no, that's not good, because I want to get it up to Rove, right? You remember the Ri says that most of the mos that are candidates to be found are chulin mos, right? Because you have a volume of 50% from the mocher, and then you have the mocher's money that was not part of this transaction. So when I look at the volume of mos, I come to the conclusion, says the Ri, that most of the mos are chulin. Yeah, most of the mos are chulin. but not most of the most on the floor. Most of the most on the floor are going to be Maaser Sheni. Why? Because there's more of a chance that it was dropped from the Lochim, who are manifold, than it was dropped from the Mocher. Yeah, Phil says, well, maybe the Mocher has more holes in his pocket. Well, maybe Tosin's not assuming that there's a greater chance that the Mocher has holes in his pocket than the Lochim. We're just going to count heads. And every head is a potential loser, so to speak, a loser of most. So you have 10 people, each one might be a potential loser. And then you have the mocher. Again, you could aim it over Sophie. You could always say the mocher is more careful about his most. You could come up with a 50 million svaras. But Tosfos is willing to do the following. Let's distinguish between the most and the volume of most as one analysis, as opposed to the people who might have dropped the most. And even if you conclude that based on the volume of most, the chances are that this ma came from chulin, because there's a greater volume of chulin most here in this vicinity, in this bag, or all the bags combined, I still say that there's a greater chance based on people, on counting people, counting heads as I called it, that this fell from the lokeach, because there are many lokeim for one mocher. And basically what the re ends up with is a suffix. Meaning, fascinating, the re says that there are two robes. And these two robes operate independent, one independent to the other, and they are at loggerheads. There's a tug of war here between two robes. One robe says, well, most of the most here in this vicinity are chulin, because I have the 50% of the most in the mocher's possession, which are chulin, plus the most that were in the bag even before he started these transactions, the mocher's own home piggyback, his own collection of most. But against that robe chulin, I have a robe meiser. Why do I have a robe meiser? Because the chances are greater that this money fell from the lokhim. So the lokhim might have less money in their pockets. In other words, if you consider that the, you know, all the money that they have in their pockets are meiser, because they came to the animal vendor in order to buy meiser. So the most that they have are meiser sheni most. Again, that itself needs a lot of clarification, but let's assume. But the mocher has not only the money that he received from the lokhim, he has his own money, so therefore there's a greater volume of mos here in this vicinity that belong to that are chulin. But on the other hand, you have to ask a different question. We're not asking about the volume, the total volume of mos. We're asking a question about the mos that are on the ground, i.e. the mos that were lost. If I could only know who lost those mos, I would know the nature of the mos. The problem is I don't know who dropped the mos. If I have reason to believe that Rov, it was dropped by the Lokhim, then I know that the mos are Maaser Sheni, because that's what the Lokhim are carrying in their pockets. And even though there's one mocher, but can I get that one mocher, we have 10 Lokhim. So the Re says that this is not just Palga. This is not the way Rashi presented it, that I have no way of knowing whether these mos came from the mocher or from the lokhim, and therefore I have a 50-50 suffik and suffik lechumra. But rather, says the Re, we have one rove pitted against another rove. Now, I want to suggest two different explanations of the Re. I'm not sure whether the Re means that when you pit one rove against the other, you end up with a suffix. We end up with what we call teku. Or perhaps what the Re is saying is that one rove, I'm going to call it rove number two, makes the first rove totally irrelevant. It neutralizes the first rove. The Re is not trying to apply the principle of suffix and saying that one rove pitted against another rove ends up with a suffix, but rather what the Re means is that the second rove completely undermines and neutralizes the first rove. Why would I say such a crazy thing? Because who cares about the volume of mos? Imagine you have in front of you, I'll just dramatize it, you have in front of you 11 people, one of which drops mos, correct? Do I care if I find a mo, one single coin? Do I care if amongst the 11 people, one of those people one of those people has a massive amount of coins in his pocket. Again, Phil, I'm not assuming that because of that, this weight, then it's going to rip his pants. Let's leave out that. You know, you can just confuse us. But I'm just saying the following. When you look at these 11 people, each of which is a candidate for having dropped the maw that you found, is it relevant at all to ask how many coins are there in the pocket of Plony as opposed to Amoni? In other words, should we investigate, you know, each one of these 11 people and set up a, you know, a chart and say, well, Reuven has 100 coins in his pocket, Shimon only has 50 coins in his pocket, etc., etc., etc. And therefore I'm going to assume that Reuven must have dropped this coin and not the other 10 people. Oh no, says the Ri, that row of how many coins you're carrying in your pocket is totally irrelevant. So the fact that the Mocher has, number one, 50% of the transaction money, and then another percentage, a miut, of his own personal mos, all of which are chulin, that gives me a majority, so he's holding on to a majority of mos, that's totally irrelevant. Because there are 11 potential losers here who might have dropped this maw. And the statistical probability of rov here depends upon those who dropped it, and not those who are carrying mos. It could very well be that, according to the Ri, there are two rovs here. Each rove is valid unto itself. What I'm suggesting, Rabosai, is that rove is not statistics. We think that rove depends upon statistics. That's not how rove operates. Rove operates based on certain rules and regulations. If we have rove mos, that's a rove. If we have rove people, that's also a rove. And both roves are valid. I'm not going to ask the question, well, let's, you know, I don't know if anyone here took statistics in college. I didn't take statistics because one of my siblings took statistics and she got a D in the course. She had an A average in college except for one black spot on her transcript or whatever you call it. She took statistics. I have another relative of mine who took Russian and got a D in Russian. So I decided I'm not taking Russian. Even though my father spoke Russian fluently, that was his first language. No, anyway, Yiddish was his first language. But both my in-laws speak Russian. Which is great when they have to communicate with Valerie, you know, who cleans up the place. Anyway, so the rove here operates in a whole different way. It's not statistics. Rove is a halacha that has its own life to it, its own definition to it. And I'm going to quote a Rashash. Okay? The Mishnah says in Ksubis that a Kohen wants to marry a Jewish girl, but a Kohen is not allowed to marry a Jewish girl who had a relationship with a non-Jew. And the tragedy of it is, but that's the way halacha, I didn't write the book, so don't write me a letter of complaint. The tragedy is that even if she was raped by a non-Jew, she can no longer marry a Kohen. Yeah, it's pretty tragic. When they tell you, I don't know if you know what NCSY means, when they tell you that halacha is just, you know, a bowl of cherries, tell them to go fly a kite. Halacha is very harsh and very demanding. Oh. So the Gemara, the Mishnah in Ksubis tells the following story. A Jewish girl was raped. Now, we don't know who the Ma'anes, the rapist was. We don't know if he was a Jew or he's a guy. And the Nafkamina now is whether Cohen could marry this girl. So the Gemara says, the Mishnah says, it depends on rov. If most of the people in that town, in that city are goyim, then she can't marry a Kohen. If most of the inhabitants of the town, most of the people, or the citizens of the town are Jews, then she can marry a Kohen. Now, Rabbi Kiveger on the Mishnah asks the following question. Supposing there are 51 Jews in the town and 50 goyim in the town, what does the Mishnah say? No. That the Kohen is allowed to marry. Right? You have it? 51 Jews in the town against 50 goyim. The Mishnah says the Kohen can marry her. Says Rabbi Kiveger, which Kohen can marry her? Says Rabbi Kiveger, any Kohen can marry her. Even a Kohen who's a member of the town. Or he says, even a Kohen who's not a member of the town but knows for sure that he didn't rape this girl. Uh-huh. If he knows for sure, hopefully he's a good guy, he's not responsible. You know, they say Nixon's the one, right? He's not the one. Then I'm really dating myself. Then, right? Then Lechora, this is the Rashash's Kasha on Rabbi Kiveger. I don't understand. Rabbi Kiveger, how can that Kohen marry this girl? What is the percentage, the statistics, from the Kohen's perspective? 50-50. He knows he's not included in the Rove. The Mishnah doesn't make any stipulations. Apparently he's allowed to marry her, even though he knows darn well that he wasn't the one. He's looking at 50-50. Says the Rashash, you see that Rove is not statistical probability. From a perspective of statistical probability, he could not be included in the Rove because he knows he wasn't the Boel. And if he was not the Boel, then from his perspective, it's 50-50. Rove is halacha. And the way that the Torah envisioned or designed Rove with its own regulations is that we have a Rove because we look at this situation and we ask, what are the percentages? And if we have a Rove, that tells me that she's Muteris, that the Boel was not a guy, he was a Jew, and a Kohen can marry her. We don't have to ask the question, well, let's investigate every single Yisrael until we finally conclude, Eidechenem Bisurin, that not one of the 51 Jews in the town was the Boel. No, that's not how it works. This is not a question of investigation, this is not a question of statistics, we're not taking a course in probability theory. This is Rove, and Rove works with its own rules and regulations. Says the Rashash, listen carefully. I get chills when I think about this. The Rashash says, I find a piece of meat in a town. And the Gemara in Ksubis applies the principle of Rove. And it's called a parish meruba parish. What are the percentage of kosher meat in the town as opposed to trefa meat in the town? Butchers, meat, again, it's very complicated. Do we count butcher shops? Do we count the volume of meat? Anyway, listen carefully to the Rashash, unbelievable Rashash. The Rashash says the following, that there are 50 pieces of meat in the town. I'm just making up a number, right? 40 out of the 50 are kosher meat, kosher pieces of meat. However, the kosher meat fits into the following two categories. 30, what did I say, 40 and 10? What was my number? 40 and 10? Oh. He says, again, this is not his quote, but 35 out of the 40 pieces of meat in the town are square. 5 out of the 40 are triangular. The 10 pieces of trefa meat in the town are all triangular. And he found the triangular piece of meat. Says the Rashash, eat it, and we'll make kiddush on it. It's mutter. Now wait a second. What happened here? I found the triangular piece of meat. The majority of triangular pieces of meat in the town are treif. But most of the pieces of meat in the town are kosher. But I didn't find a square piece of meat. I found a triangular piece of meat. Says Rashash, go ahead and eat the meat. Why? Because Rove operates with meat. It doesn't differentiate between square and triangular meat. Rabosai, obviously, what does the Rashash hold? Is Rove statistical probability? No. Absolutely not. Let's take the Rashash and Ksubas and apply it here to this toast of the reed. Tosis is right. The chances are that one of the lokhim, the many, many lokhim, would have dropped, because he has a hole in his pocket, would have dropped this coin, which would mean it's Maiser Sheni. In that sense, why do I care if most of the coins here are chulin, because the mocher has not only the transaction money, which is chulin, he also has his own money. Lechora, It's not one rove against the other. Statistically, the first rove is null and void. It's meaningless because who cares about the volume of coins? I want to know about the coin that's on the floor. Who dropped the coin? But the answer is that rove operates with its own rules and regulations. And one of the rules and regulations is I look at the volume of coins, and if the volume of coins are mostly chulin, then that rove tells me it's chulin. Then there's another rule that says I have to look at the majority of ma'abdim, meaning of those who lost the coins, and the majority of the ma'abdim are holding on to most ma'aser sheni, says the Ri. Now I posit one rove against the other, and I end up with what? With a suffix. Fascinating Rashi over here with Tosfos. Let's go on.
Presumably the halacha doesn't follow the
Rashash. Are you sure? I don't know. Do you know that? No, I don't know that, Michael. Just, the Rashash is a heavy hitter, Michael. Don't mach me to hand. You know, you can't.
I just find it very hard.
Yeah, that's because you and I assume, since we've weaned ourselves from our mother's milk, that Rove is statistics. But Rove is not statistics. And the Rashash has many, many proofs that Rove is not the same as statistical probability. Which gives me a sense of hope that maybe one day I'll understand what Rove is, even though I never took statistics in college. That's the good news. So now Rashi goes on. You have the Rashi Bahara Bayis, Li Olam Chul, Bafilu B'Shas HaRegel. So I go on to the Arabayis, it's the Shas HaRegel. Yesh mos ma'aser sheni merubim b'Yerushalayim mimos chulin, correct? So there's a massive amount, an influx of ma'aser sheni geld into Yerushalayim. But nevertheless, on the Harabayis, lo masafkinan le lamaser. We don't assume because we have a suffix it's maser. Why? Das linen basaruba. What rove? Not the recent rove, but what?
The whole year.
That's called the shata. The shata means shalashana. So I look at the whole year round. Most of the coins the whole year round are chulin. Vamrinon, and we say lav ha'idne nafal. I'm not going to apply the principle of basra. Elo kodem haregel. This may have fallen before the regel. And Yerushalayim b'sharim osashon is chulin. Because most of the coins in the city during the entire year are chulin, but b'shas haregel maser, because now we assume basra, we assume it's recent. Can refresh time, the Gemara is going to ask, why is this so? Matam b'shas haregel maser. For long reading, we shouldn't say kodem haregel nafel, because if we would say kodem haregel nafel, we go back to the majority of the coins over the course of the year, which would be chulin. As we said, says Rashi, in the case of Arabayis, and the answer is, Hol v'shvake Yerushalayim asuyim l'skabim b'chol yom ibnei atit. In other words, we don't like the fact that people are walking around with muddy shoes anywhere in Yerushalayim. You know, they say in the name of Rav Kook, you know, the first chief rabbi of Palestine, that he said, if I had a choice between being a street cleaner in Yerushalayim or being a fancy lawyer in Chutz Lartz, I'd rather be a street cleaner in Yerushalayim. It's really interesting because I wake up very early in Har Nof, and very often I see the garbage collectors. It's always a rush, you know, to get out before they get there, because in my street, once the garbage collector is there, you can wait about 20 minutes. That's it. So, but they already know me, these guys. So they see me getting into my car. They say, well, wait, let. They don't know me by name, but it's it. So I always tip my hat to them. They're really nice guys here. You know, garbage collectors in this country are very nice people. I'm not going to talk to you about taxi drivers. That's a different question. No, nothing against taxi drivers. Well, maybe I do. But as far as garbage collectors are concerned, they're involved in a mitzvah of kibud Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim has a certain kedusha to it, and that kedusha generates a chiyuv of getting rid of all the mud that accumulates on the streets of Yerushalayim. Halavai that as religious Jews we should be careful, first of all, not to cause any dirt, and secondly, going further, maybe we should help clean up the streets of Yerushalayim, because we pass in kitchel shaitim and kitchel asim lovo. And I remember in Canada, the minhag was that when you go into someone's house during most of the year, because it's always winter in Canada, you have to take off your shoes before you go in. You say, it's really interesting because in any Canadian house, you always know how many guests are in the house at any given time, because you just count the pairs of shoes. But maybe there's another reason why on the Har Bayis we don't have to worry about the dirt and And Rashi's going to give us a whole spiel here that on the Har Bais, because it was on an incline, then the wind would clean the afar. But then Rashi says, V'od, ein adam nichnas ba'avak shal raglov. That a person doesn't go onto the Har Bais, and the makar for this is week's parsha, by the way, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu, shal nalcha me'al raglecha. So in Canada, I guess every house is so holy, they tell you to take off your shoes, but, you know, at least the Har Bais, and that's where Moshe Rabbeinu was at the time of the Sneh. It was on the Har Bais. So he says, Alma, what we see from Yerushalayim is that kol dover hasi l'skaved, anything that's cleaned out, tamrinan kame kame ozli. So if I want to, if I want to make an effort to return a lost object that I find in a hotel room, I don't have to, go down to the office and ask him to give me a printout of the last 50 people that occupied that hotel room. Just give me the list of the last guy who was there, because on a daily basis they clean it out. So we assume that she may have missed something yesterday when she cleaned the room, and that belongs to the last occupant. Now Rashi applies this to our bread basket, and he says, "Ustam tevos shemishtam shimbahem." Ochlin means we put food into these tevos, and there were other tevos that they used for money or they used for clothing, but these were tevos that were designated for food substance. Is notlim rishon rishon? They take out the earlier ones one by one. Why? Kadesh lo yisapshu, because you want to eat the earlier ones that are closer to its expiration date and are going to spoil. And Bekolshkin, how much more so when he finds matzah, he finds an unidentified pastry on Pesach, Mistama Bodka Zeliar Arbasar. So yesterday he certainly did a bedika, and let's assume that he checked his bread basket. So what does he find now? Hai Basrahi. This is not a piece of pastry that should be put into the rove of the whole year round. The rove of the whole year round has no impact on this pastry, on determining its identity, because we have Halach of Basra. And what sets up Halach of Basra, what parallels Yerushalayim, that Shvak Yerushalayim Asun was Kavu Kol Yom, it's the fact that we take out each piece of bread, Rishon, Rishon, Kadei Shalo Yisapshu, U'matzahi, and if I know that what was put here into this basket is matzah. So we're really stuck here, because Rav says, let's look at the whole year round, and let's determine what is the majority use of this teva during the course of the entire year. So I'll just read one more line in the Gemara, and then I'll let you go. The Gemara says, Shiny Hacha, this case of Pasha Ipsha is different. Why? De'ipusha mochiach iluye. You're right. We should really have assumed that this is a more recent addition and an entry into the basket, into the teva. That would normally be the case, and then we would go basar basar. Here's the exception. Why? Because of the ipush. The spoilage itself indicates that it's an old piece of bread. And if it's an old piece of bread, I go back to the earlier time, and therefore I assume that it might very well be chametz if it was used most of the year for chametz. So let's just make a note of where we got up to, and that's ipusha mochiach alei. And believe me, tomorrow we'll finish this up and we'll start the famous sugya, perhaps the most famous sugya in the first perek, that's called Abodeik Sarech Sheyivarech. Well, again, the kol shu mashu means if I have different pieces. Let's say I have a small piece here and a little crumb here and so forth. So on. Here we're talking about one whole piece. Imagine the case of a pita. So there are no crumbs. So there's no isur mashu. I just have to determine, is this chametz or is it matzah?